This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling. This is the main event, your home for everything modern day wrestling. Welcome to episode number 182, the Jason Witten episode, because everybody knows Jason Witten is just such a hard worker. He's got a high motor. He's a student of the game. He's the first one in the gym and the last one to leave. He's just deceptively fast. And that reminds me of my co-host, ladies and gentlemen. He is the conscience of Place to Be Nation. You know this man. You love this man. Steve, I got the Glock. Willie, how are you, my brother?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm gonna say this is going to be a pretty sharp show. I mean, we don't have Scott here, but yes. You know, we can talk about our good friend Shannon Sharp.
Look here, Skip. Come on, Skip. You're talking crazy, Skip. Like, that's my limited Shannon Sharp impression. Like, it all hinges around, like, the Skip. Like, the Skip is really good, I think, Steve. Everything else just is kind of like a stereotype. But the Skip is like, pitch-perfect Shannon Sharp.
What number, Yeah, I mean, we had, what was number with Sterling Sharp? Because he was up in my neck of the woods for quite a while.
Sterling 84?
He might. 88. Yeah, he had some fun time with the Law, if I can remember correctly.
Yeah, Sterling Sharp was a great receiver. I think the Law that you mentioned, and we're not talking about John Pollock and Wei Ting's old gig, mm-hmm. but the authorities and injuries really kind of cut that career short, I think.
Yes.
So yeah, like this, I think this is a football number because I didn't see anybody in the history of the NBA that wore this. And you've got in baseball, a lot of people that had a cup of coffee and not much more.
Yeah. I didn't see anybody in the NBA. So hopefully there'll be a European player coming over soon that will end that drought.
Yes. But to continue a theme, Scotty and I started on the last episode. The last song we went out with, the song we closed the show with, was LL Cool J's Football from Wildcats. And it's the weirdest song in the world when you think about it, Steve, because like this is LL Cool J in the 80s rapping about football players from the 50s. It would be like Lil Wayne doing a tribute to Mean Joe Green. Like, it doesn't make sense. There's no connection there. And so Raymond Berry was also number 82, and he was mentioned in that song, which is just weird to me. Like, the fact that song got made for that movie is just kind of weird, Steve Willie. But you know, and it's not weird.
Not to be confused with the good mayor, Marion.
Not Marion Berry or, no. You know, Marion Berry of, you know, the Witch Set Me Up fame. Fred Berry, who was rerun on What's Happening. Mary Berry, who I think ran for governor of California one year, like the Schwarzenegger year.
Also on Great British Bake Off.
Ooh, okay, okay. Chuck Berry, who also had some run-ins with the authorities. How far can we go down this Berry path, Steve? How many Berries can we pick?
Is there a Brian Berry?
I don't know if there's a Brian Berry. I do know that there's a Brian Mann, Steve Willie. And what a coincidence joining us on the show this week. You know, because Scotty is on assignment, we had to get a great guest to fill in this week. And this is a guest that should be no stranger to anybody that's listened to my catalog, my oeuvre, I believe is the word, Steve Willie, of podcasts. But he is making his debut on Place to Be Nation. So this is a big deal. This is like Leo Rush showing up on Dynamite last night. This is the debut of writer, podcaster, cultural critic, social justice warrior, Twitter snowflake, And most importantly, my friend, Brian Mann. Brian, how are you, brother?
I'm great. By the way, Booberry.
Ooh, taking us down the cereal aisle.
The less loved, Count Chocula cousin.
That was just lazy. They're like,
thank you for
Count Chocula
for
was a brilliant idea, and Booberry was just lazy, Brian.
There was like a third one, right? That we're not.
It was like Frankenstein had a cereal.
Frankenberry.
It was Frankenberry and Booberry. Like that's just lazy, General Mills.
They gave up on Booberry.
Now I'm going to blow your mind right now, because over the last couple of years, and this is what happens when you have kids and you're going to Target and you're going to all these stores, they've done these combo cereals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have one that I saw recently that is Monster Mash, where they just basically take all of those flavors historically over the years, the blueberries, the Frankenberries, the Count Chocula. And I'm looking up now, apparently there's fruit. Oh, no. Here's a wrestling tie-in. Fruit Booty. Or fruit.
So Stevie Craig had a cereal.
and Yummy Mummy. And they just throw them all together in a box.
Yummy Mummy. They just got General Mills. Step your game up.
Yeah. And then November 1st, it will be about 87 cents in the clear style.
Wait. They called it Yummy Mummy?
Yeah, I never heard of that.
Not Marsh Mummies? It's right there. It's so much better.
I'm surprised they got away with Fruit Booties. Like, that seems very risque for the 80s or the 90s, whenever they came out.
Listen, maybe we thought Stevie Ray was being homophobic. He might have just landed an endorsement deal. He was years ahead of John Cena and Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, he was advertising cereal and lollipops. You know, Fruit Booties and Suckers Got to Know.
What I love about this show is we go off on these rants sometimes. Like,
yes.
Historically, running down the, the TNT ratings for every drama from like the 90s, you can get a Booberry Funko Pop or a Frankenberry or a Count Chocula. So I'm sending this to you.
The Marsh Mummy erasure is real.
Yeah, it's marked up to $90.
No
Funko,
thanks.
You lost your integrity. Funko used to stand for something. This is all downhill when they started making the Drew McIntyre one.
Does it come with a sword?
Booberry? No.
Yes, we have gotten a bit off topic, a bit out of bounds, like the great Raymond Berry, Steve Willie. But yes, Brian Mann is joining us this week, ladies and gentlemen. And it is a good thing that, Brian is joining us. A happy coincidence, because this week we're going to spend most of our time discussing AEW and what's been going on in Tony Khan land recently. And Brian, I guess we can kind of start here, because Brian happened to be in the building, in the stadium for one of AEW's, I guess you could argue it's AEW's biggest show to date. And that was the Arthur Ashe tapings, the live show with Dynamite and the taping for Rampage. So Brian, kicking things off this week, give us your impression of AEW's planting the flag, I guess, in the middle of New York City.
So, it definitely was their largest show in terms of attendance. I would say it was their largest show ever, just because I think there's been other shows. You know, as it was their biggest show, and it probably featured one of their greatest matches ever, in the Omega Danielson match, but it really didn't have the importance or the newsworthiness that other shows have had. All that being said, I was also at the New Jersey show the week before and got my ticket. I will be at the show in Long Island as well, if that gives an indication as to where my hat is currently tipping in the wrestling war. It was, I got to say, both weeks, it's a blast. Like, honestly, it is. If I can just sort of talk about the AEW experience, it's so much fun. It's a party. The people putting on the show and the people in the ring clearly want to entertain you, and they clearly want to make the most of the moment. And it's very different than WWE. I'm assuming all of us have gone to WWE shows, and when you go there, it's very obvious that you are at a live taping of a production that is on a conveyor belt. And it doesn't really matter what you think of the show. They're going to do the show they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And with very few exceptions, they usually don't really, design the show to be special for the place they're in. We saw, the Madison Square Garden show recently. They planned some special stuff, but with the AEW show, it was very clear the performers thought the night was special. Mm-hmm. They wanted to treat it as something unique. And that wasn't necessarily the case for everybody. For some people, it might have just been cool that they were in front of the biggest crowd that they'd ever been in front of. For other people, like you would see with Santana and Ortiz, it meant a lot to them. The Eddie Kingston moment at the end was fantastic. And he had a promo at the end that I don't think has been online. But, the thing that he said was that AEW sold out this building before Punk and Cole and Danielson got there. And in doing so, they put their flag in the mud. But now that those guys are here, their flag is now in concrete. And AEW is New York. And AEW now runs New York. And that, I think, is probably maybe true, if I had to say, based on what I saw in the building and also what we're seeing in terms of ticket sales with, their AEW is outselling WWE in the same building in Long Island. And so far, Survivor Series tickets aren't like going crazy. Now, I do anticipate Dwayne Johnson to be on that show. I'm sure once they announce him, it will do very well. I'm sure the building will be full because it is New York City. But it's the only thing I could say is, like, if you've ever gone to like a really cool indie show or here in New York, I can't necessarily say that an indie show has ever really owned New York City. Mm-hmm. Like at times Evolve kind of felt like they had it. Sometimes ROH when they would come to town. There's a couple times where Brooklyn was so good at hijacking WWE shows that it would be fun to go to. But this show felt like you were at an Evolve show or an ROH show, but with 20,000 people, that everyone was buzzing and everyone knew, the chants, and no one was trying to, like, there might have been like a couple drunk people who were being annoying, but like no one was trying to hijack the show. No one was trying to take it over. For me, one of the most amazing things to watch live was the Ruby Soho Britt Baker segment, where it started and you could tell that Ruby was a little nervous on the mic. People were maybe like, okay, we're not going to boo her, but maybe, we're going to see how she does. But then she got the crowd completely on her side by the end. And it was really special to watch that happen live. It's a fantastic experience. Like, that's all I can say. Like, it really is part live theater, part sporting event, and part rock concert. It's incredible. Like, I was hoarse the next day from the amount of singing and cheering that I had done. I can't say enough how great of an experience it is.
Yeah, Brian destroyed his voice singing that Young Bucks song all night. I know it.
Listen, I screamed Adam Cole Bebe. I got to sing Judas like three times. It was great.
Steve, you've been we've talked a little bit about your experiences with AEW in Chicago. Does a lot of what Brian's saying, does that ring true for you?
Yeah, I mean, especially I would say that there's even been a marked difference between, like, when I went to the original All Out. I didn't go to All In, but the first All Out. Then Revolution, which was right before the pandemic hit. And then this most recent All Out, where it is more like that party atmosphere. And the crowd is different, I think. The crowd is really in tune with what's going on in wrestling. And it's not like, at least for me, back in the day going to shows, and I mean any shows, like when I was younger and like going to ECW or a WWE show, and people would be like, I read on the internet that this is going to happen. And it would be like the most, just completely made up story. I was there at Ring of Honor shows where there was a guy behind me doing commentary, live commentary over over the entire show. And it's not like that. Like, no one's, it doesn't feel like anyone is trying to ruin that experience. Like, people were saying, excuse me, and just like introducing themselves from next to you. Like, hey, I, you know, nice to meet you. I'm from here. And it's like, oh, okay. I'm not used to this politeness at a wrestling show. But yeah, and even like the production, I'd say, is much tighter. I did go to the Milwaukee TV tapings as well, and that was the first television taping I went to, and that was a little bit different of an experience. I think it was, out of the shows that they've done the last couple of months, probably the lesser of those shows. It wasn't, with the exception of Punk coming out. I don't know, Brian, like when you went to the show, how many dark matches they did before Dynamite?
They did about an hour, and I think if I remember correctly, that Milwaukee show you're referencing, I remember that being like, it came out the next day that they were like just plagued with like a lot of people getting pulled at the last minute for various reasons, and wasn't that the one that was like main evented by like Malachi and Brock Anderson?
Yes, yeah. Very much so.
Which is like a fine match, but you should not be closing the show with that. And I think it came out the next day that like they lost, like Santana suddenly wasn't available, one of the FTR guys was out, and there's like, it was just a show where like it was just plagued by a lot of like really unfortunate last minute, you know. But yeah, I remember that show. I do remember.
And then Giannis came out, and it was.
Oh yeah, that was great though.
Yep.
Yeah, and I feel like that's something they've been doing with the live experience too. They, like Tony Khan, brought out Little Uzi Vert within one of the last two shows. In between the tapings.
Yep.
So yeah, doing little stuff like that. Yeah, All Out was, I don't know if I was even on since I went to All Out. You know, I thought when I left that it was, you know, whenever you're at a live show, it's always better, obviously, than when you watch it on television. It doesn't matter how poor or great the show is. It's just that live experience and being around people. But when my buddy and I left, we're like, is that the greatest show we've ever seen live? And we're trying to think, like, I think it is.
I mean, listen, it is the greatest show. It's the greatest show I've ever seen on TV. So, well,
that was the thought the fact. Like, was that the greatest show ever? Mm-hmm. We were trying to, like, oh, this has got to be recency bias. And the fact that we were here, and, you know, then you come back and start listening the next day and hearing, no, it was one of the greatest shows ever.
Well, and that was for me. I mean, that Danielson Omega match was so phenomenal live. And obviously, I can never go back and watch it live again. But the fact that it plays so fantastically on TV, I mean, I've watched that match twice since I saw it live. So, I mean, I think it's a real testament to just the whole, and a lot of what you're saying there, I think is accurate, because I don't think that match would play if they didn't have the kind of crowd that they did. And I think one of the big things that we could, that's a real learning point of AEW, is this audience that for years people said, oh, that's just the hardcores, or that's the online, or you know X, Y, and Z. Oh, you know, NXT is popular with a small demographic. Like all the excuses that we've been hearing for a decade, that we have been told multiple reasons why we as lifelong fans of this art form should not expect what we want out of the product that WWE has offered us, you know, and I think a lot of us kind of believed it too, of like, oh, well, yeah, I like this thing, but like, I'm a dumb internet nerd, and like mainstream would never like this. And I think AEW has just in a very short time proven just how wrong that thinking was. I've always been a big believer in this philosophy that if you take the thing that has created devoted fans on a small level, and then you blow it up to a large level, I think that usually works. You know, those of us that are fans of comic books, we watched decades of comic book movies where movie studio buys the rights to a property and says, okay, this thing that's popular, well, you can't do all of these things in a movie, so do it this way. You know, the X-Men should all wear black, you know, leather suits, and this is how you do it. And these can't be interconnected stories. And then Marvel comes in and says, actually, all the things that made the comic books really popular, let's try putting that on film. And they completely changed the way that the the movie industry is run now because of that. And I think the same thing is, I think, going to end up being true for wrestling, where for whatever reason, WWE has decided that the casual fans lead the culture, which is not true and has never been true. Casual fans are followers. So what you do is you take the things that have created fiercely loyal, dedicated fans on a micro level and increase the distribution of it. And what's so wild is, like, Vince understood that in the 80s. That's what, you know, the rock and wrestling, the Hulkamania boom was. It was just taking things that were popular on smaller platforms and putting them on a national platform. And so when you say things like, oh, Adam Cole could never be like a star nationally, or, you know, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, this stuff wouldn't work on national TV. You can't do this. You can't play to this audience. And then you do it and you find out, no, actually, you can, and you probably should. And if someone tunes into TV and they see the two products, one that is so desperately trying to appeal to people that don't like wrestling, and one that's like, oh, a show in this just buzzing auditorium where everyone's having fun and they're cheering and they're like, they're on their feet. I know which one looks like a show you want to watch.
So you mentioned something, Brian, in your answer, and I keyed in on it. And you talked about how AEW is learning and how they're re-educating the audience. And it brings me back to a past life, Brian, man, where you and I talked about a little mom and pop operation called TNA, run by lovely.
I didn't know where we were going to go.
Yes. Just follow me down the path, Brian. And, you know, TNA was run by a lovely woman named Dixie Carter, who used her parents' money to bring in all of these stars from another company. And Brian, I'm wondering, like, what has been kind of the biggest change or the biggest difference for you with AEW? Because I feel like Tony Khan could have easily fallen into a lot of the same traps and pitfalls that Dixie did, you know, a decade ago. So what has made AEW different?
So I think the big thing that is so different here, and it's been funny to see people, and this was, for whatever reason, a talking point on, like, Twitter last week, where people were talking about, you know, well, Tony is just spending his dad's money, and he's not a self-made man like Vince, which we're not going to waste time talking about that. But I think the thing that really does go to show the real skill of Tony Khan is the fact that TNA had pretty much all of the same advantages. They were on a large national, platform. They had pretty much endless revenue, really, when it comes to, you know, if TNA was successful and made money, Panda Energy would have put more money into it. Like, they would have paid to grow the thing. The big difference is that TNA was just like a vanity thing to, like, keep Dixie busy. And yeah, they were on TV, but they didn't make enough money from TV. The TV business was different then. But the real big problem is that Dixie just didn't understand or respect the industry she was in or her audience. And she trusted a lot of people with really bad insights. On top of that, WWE was not as incompetent as they are now. They were pretty incompetent, but they weren't as incompetent as they are. So, and it's funny when people say things like, oh, I don't want AEW just picking up all these WWE, you know, rejects. And it's like, yes, that was a fine talking point 10, 15 years ago to talk about TNA, because that was a time period when WWE was only getting rid of people they didn't want anymore and they couldn't make money off of anymore. Now, WWE, because they hoarded so much talent and because Vince McMahon's perception of what a star is so wildly off base, they are cutting extraordinarily capable talents in the prime of their career. This isn't, you know, no offense to these guys, but it isn't signing Booker T and Kevin Nash in, you know, 2007. This, we're talking about Malakai Black, you know, we're talking about Dean Ambrose, you know, we're talking about really major talents. Daniel Bryan, you know, there was never the closest thing to a Daniel Bryan level talent that switched over was Kurt Angle. And clearly that was a completely different situation. And on top of that, like, TNA, like, they tried touring. It didn't work. Now, one thing that I do think has helped AEW is that I do think the internet has helped AEW greatly, in that you have wrestlers who have become national household names to wrestling fans without ever actually being on national television. People like the Bucks, people like, you know, Kenny, that they were able to launch a platform. They were able to launch a promotion with them, which probably wouldn't have been the case. But even that being said, a lot of the people that are top stars in WWE now, TNA could have signed them. You know, if TNA hadn't been so in this mindset of, well, we got to sign Orlando Jones and Sean Morley, and we got to do the EV 2.0 angle, they could have signed Kevin Steen and Generico and Prince Devitt, and all of these people were available. But they just had this idea of, nope, if you've never been on national TV, you can't be a star. TNA, it's, and I'll wrap up this long-winded thing. It's like, you need to have success, and this is pretty much with any entertainment venture. You need to have all three things. You need to have funding, you need to have the product, and you need to have distribution. TNA had two of the three. They didn't have the product. They had the money. And they had the distribution. They did not have the product. And we're seeing with AEW, they've got the money, they have the distribution, and they have a great product. And I don't think, you know, are they as hot as, you know, WWE at the height of like 99? No. But I think they might be WWE in 97. And all it takes is one really hot angle to bring a lot of people to the product. And, you know, things are already pretty tight, but I don't know. That's all I'll say.
You know, there's something you said in there too about the talent kind of and the internet. And I'm even thinking, I have a picture from this week pulled up on my computer right now of Sammy Guevara, who won the TNT belt this week. And Sammy, you know, was kind of with the Inner Circle for quite a while, but the last few weeks of television, it's been more circulated around his friendship with Fuego del Sol, who, as far as I knew, I don't watch Dark, but he was just a jobber on there. And all of a sudden, in the first episode of Rampage, I mean, you know, he gets offered the contract after going against Miro. There are you know, people crying in the crowd. And you know, when Sammy won last night, it wasn't the Inner Circle that came out by the end of the program. It was Alan Angels. It was Marco Stunt. It was Fuego. And these are all part of Sammy's vlog.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people.
Not to cut you off, I do think Santana and Ortiz should have come out.
They eventually did, yes.
They did? Okay, good. Because Hager and Jericho were selling the angle from Friday. But yeah, that's all. Sorry to cut you off. That's all.
Yeah, the first people out were part of that vlog crew that they have. And that's nothing, but that vlog, not something I watch, but it is massively taken off over the last few months.
Absolutely.
And that's like someone like what my kid would watch, you know, like a lot of other kids who are watching YouTube. That's how, you know, they're going to be introduced to those people. And that's kind of going with what you said about the crowd feeling that they're part of something, that they've watched these people from when they were first starting up and watching them rise out the ranks.
And they're
huge.
Well, I was going to say, and that's an element of social media that I think WWE hasn't fully realized. Which is that it used to be, and this is even, you know, back during the TNA days a little bit, when you got cut from WWE, you kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. If you weren't on nationwide national TV, suddenly your connection with your fans disappeared. And now that just doesn't get interrupted. You can get released from WWE and continue to talk to your most passionate, like Ruby Soho. Ruby Soho showed up in that battle royal. The crowd's already chanting her new name. They give her a huge pop. They know her song. They pop when they see the back of her vest. And that is only possible because of social media. She left WWE and she never lost connection with her fans. She was able to put these vignettes out there. And so she shows up on TV and suddenly the audience is fully up to speed on the new name, the new song, and they are there and they hit the ground running. This isn't like back when it would be like in TNA and, you know, a bleached blonde guy walks out on stage and, you know, Mike Tenay is going like, oh, my God, that's Mr. Anderson. Because it's not Mr. Anderson anymore.
So it's a long-running joke on this show.
Exactly. It's like, we no longer have to educate you that he now goes by this name instead of that name. It's just – and it's that is something I think WWE hasn't fully latched onto. And ironically, when it also comes to that, I think anyone who's over in WWE is over because of social media. I think the New Day is over because of their podcast and what they do on social media. It's not because of how they're booked on the show. But that's a whole other thing. I mean, it almost seems like anyone who has organic, actual fan support in WWE, it's because the fans actively ignore what they see on television and connect with the people based on what they see on social media. Whereas with AEW, what's on TV and what's online do go hand in hand. You don't necessarily need to be following everything online. Like, you're not lost if you only watch the TV show, but they understand how important that expanded universe is. And that if someone, you know, becomes a passionate supporter of their product and wants to spend more time on this product, great. We have Dark. We have Elevation. We have our Road 2 shows. We have these vlogs. We have Being the Elite. They have content there if you want to dedicate that time. Not saying you have to, but you have those supplemental things. And that is such a vital part of modern day fan culture. And that's why with brands, and it's not just them, but like Disney, Marvel, all these major brands, they spend so much time and so much money on controlling their fandoms. And WWE has just gotten to a point where they say, you're with us or you're against us. If you don't like what we're giving you, tough shit. This is what we do. And you need to be a fan and you need to just support what we do.
Ryan, man, like I feel like, you know, you know me so well that you, in the middle of your answer there, you threw up an alley. And so, Steve Willey, I have to complete the oop because Brian mentioned the New Day. And so we do need to mention Steve Willey, the new WWE World Champion, Big E Langston. I'm gonna give that man his whole full name. And it was a great moment that night on Raw, even though it was terribly promoted and threw together at the last minute, in part as a reaction to what AEW's been doing. But thinking about Big E, Brian, it leads me to another talking point that's been going around the internet for a long time. And this is something I expound upon more on the Nubian Wrestling Advocates coming out next week on Post Wrestling. And the thing that I think I like the best about AEW is, and you and I have talked about this off air, is how nimble Tony Khan is with this promotion. And how if there's an issue, if there's a problem, if something's not quite clicking, we can course correct. You know, we saw that with the Dark Order, who I think a lot of people weren't hot on the Dark Order when they first debuted. And now they're one of the bigger acts in the company. Same with Britt Baker, who wasn't quite connecting when she first debuted on AEW. And now she's one of their biggest stars. And so that leads me to, you know, the monochronicity. I just made up that word. For lack of a better term, at a main event scene in AEW. And I think Tony Khan's response to that, you know, signing Lee Moriarty, bringing Leo Rush back, you know, highlighting Powerhouse Hobbs in that match with CM Punk, you know, the continued ascension of Ricky Starks, you know, Lee Johnson getting a little bit of shine with his uncle, Arm Anderson, this week. I think they're not there yet. And that's been like maybe my only sticking point with AEW thus far, Brian, is I think they can get a little bit better with how they book the women and they got to do a little bit better in terms of presenting some of their black talent. Cause for me, that was like the lone sore spot for All Out, which I loved and thought is one of the best shows I've seen in the last decade. But it's like, if we have time for Paul White and QT Marshall, you telling me you don't have time for Powerhouse Hobbs or Ricky Starks, or any of those dudes. So I am optimistic, Brian, and I will say a lot of that optimism is due to the goodwill and the good faith that AEW has engendered thus far in terms of, we see a problem, we're going to address it, we're going to fix it. It might take a little time, but we'll get there.
Yeah, I think, and just first off, because I don't do podcasts that often anymore, so I just to echo something that you've said that I haven't said on mic anywhere, is like, I'm so happy that Big E has gotten this WWE championship. And I, as well, in the beginning, was a little disappointed about how it came about. But I was like, you know what? Listen, we're here now. Let's give it a shot. And so far, I think he's done very well in the spots that they've given him. The audience does genuinely like him. And I don't think he has a lot of those perceived shortcomings that Vince will usually mm-hmm. you know, like hone in on. And it's so funny because I remember, you know, what was it, like 2015, we were saying they should put the belt on this guy. So I'm glad yep. they finally got around to doing it. I wish they had done it.
To be fair, Vince has a lot of podcasts to listen to, so he finally got around to hearing us.
Yeah, and I've only been on board for about 5 years, so I'm a little bit behind.
I wish they had done it when, I don't know, 2 to 3 million more people were watching the show. But listen, you know, 1.7, I'm glad those many people got to see the thing happen. Now, switching to, you know, AEW and the lack of diversity at the top of the card, which I think is legitimately a issue that I think is hurting them in some ways. I think that, you know, they're doing very well with white male viewers. And I think that's because there are a lot of famous white males on the show and they don't quite have the women's roster that is to the caliber, and they don't have enough stars of color, I think, that will bring in, you know, larger audiences, because it's not a surprise. People like to see themselves represented on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it helps to, you know, suspend the crazy disbelief of pro wrestling a little bit more. I think we're seeing with the women's division, and I think we will see elsewhere. I think that sometimes with everything that this company has done in such a short amount of time, they do sometimes also do overlook. I mean, this show, Dynamite, is turning 2 next year. This TV show has been on the air for 2 years. Most of their top level stars who are main eventing shows were stars in other companies before this. They haven't really created that many main event level stars. True, during the pandemic, they did main event shows with Brody Lee and Eddie Kingston and MJF. But I think it's fair to say, especially with hindsight, that they were saving a lot of stuff for when they were back on the road. I don't think they were necessarily putting their biggest foot forward. You know, they weren't going to do, you know, they weren't going to bring in CM Punk without fans. Like, we know this now.
Yeah.
And they even weren't even going to have Christian, you know, made of in a show, you know, even with smaller amount of fans, you know, that is what, and even, you know, Kenny main eventing Double or Nothing with Orange Cassidy and Pac, like they were still holding things back at that point. Now, I think when it comes and, you know, we've talked about this, Nate, where for me, where a lot of my issues, that's not the right way to put it, but I think where a lot of the shortcomings with AEW's performers of color in the main event is there's not those ready-made, already available stars just sitting out there as free agents. If there were, oh my God, Tony Khan would cut them up. If we would sign them up. If we find out tomorrow that Ricochet has been cut, or if we find out that they've let go Kofi Kingston, or you know, any number of talents, I think they would sign them up. Honestly, if Velveteen Dream didn't have all the shit that he has, I think they would have signed him up. The problem is that they are building up people who I think will be big stars in a year to two. But in terms of why isn't there a black wrestler challenging Kenny Omega, I think that's fair. But who is it? You know, Kenny Omega. Yeah, Kenny Omega main evented, you know, an Impact pay-per-view with Rich Swann, but Rich Swann is not, like, you know, it's just there's not that star out there ready and waiting. It's going to take time to build them. And I think with some of the people like you see on Impact, and this goes for some of the women as well, when people said, well, why hasn't the Forbidden Door been used to bring like Chris Bay or Deonna Purrazzo over? Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that people kind of ignore is that this whole Forbidden Door thing requires both sides to agree. And I think Impact has been very wary to allow their younger talent to come on Dynamite, because I don't think they want a situation which is similar to what Vince did in the 80s, mm-hmm. where they allow their talent to go on Dynamite, they get over on Dynamite, and then Tony Khan signs them up. So they'll let the Good Brothers go over, and they'll definitely take Kenny Omega. But there's a reason why we're not seeing the youngest and the brightest of Impact coming over. You know, yeah, like we got some NWA female performers, but it's the NWA. They'll take any publicity they can get. they're a YouTube, they're a streaming show. So like they're more than happy to be on Dynamite. But Impact is probably not going to allow like even a Moose to be on Impact. Mm-hmm. So when I step back and I look at it, my big question is always, who is that star that is not being pushed? Mm-hmm. Who is, because, and another thing that is different between AEW and WWE is WWE can put the world title on Big E with very little build.
Right.
And it won't really affect business at all. Whereas AEW still is building. And the name of the game with AEW right now, and the goal with AEW is get this audience as big as you can possibly get it before you sign that next TV deal. And then maybe you can start taking some risks. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to that main event picture, they are playing it very safe. And for me, you know, I was talking to a buddy the other day and they threw out like, well, why isn't Scorpio Sky like been a world champion? And it's like, because Scorpio Sky is not at that level. Like, I like Scorpio, but the promos are not at a main event level. And the main event scene in AEW is so incredibly high that I think that if you just suddenly put like Powerhouse Hobbs in there, I think he would drown. Mm. Like, I think you'd be setting some of these people up to fail. You know, I love, you know, I love Johnson. Johnson's like 20, he's like 22, 23.
Right.
He's just not there yet. And I mean, having watched that Powerhouse Hobbs match, you know, with Punk, he even needs some seasoning and they're building people up. And I think that's a thing that people, and the last thing I'll say, just to wrap up this long-winded answer, is that WWE also, I think rightly, has placed an increased importance on diversity. And so when they're looking at the sheet and they're looking at people to cut, they're going to cut Malakai Black before they cut Ricochet, even if Malakai Black is currently in the middle of a push storyline and they're doing nothing with Ricochet. They understand the importance of having a diverse roster. And so I think they're less likely to cut a performer of color for that reason, because I think they do understand how important it would be to AEW to snap some of those people up.
Mm. And I think, Brian, like, you bring up a good point in terms of the build, because as much as I would love to see somebody like a Ricky Starks, I think Ricky Starks, out of all of your black talent, like, Ricky to me is the guy that's most ready right now.
Absolutely. But he has the neck issues. But he is, and so, just to agree with you, he is someone that I think you could strap the rocket to. But even in AEW, like, the rocket doesn't mean we're going to get you ready in 2 weeks to main event a pay-per-view. Right. Strapping the rocket to someone means we're going to give you wins over the course of 3 months to get you somewhere.
And so to that, like, I would not want to see them just immediately hot shot the title to Ricky, because I don't even want to see them do that with Daniel Bryan. Because to me, the ultimate end game that you've been building for the better part of a year is Hangman Page.
Right.
Yes.
And I want to see that story be told before we can move on to the next chapter, where then maybe you could see Ricky, or maybe, you know, in a year from now, Powerhouse Hobbs or people like that in that mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then go ahead, Brad.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I agree.
Yeah, and then that's your quote-unquote homegrown talent at the top of the company would be a Page. And yes, granted, he was in Ring of Honor in New Japan for a hot minute, but, you know, he's one of the original AEW guys. Now, I would want to say, just to kind of add to that, I feel like within the last, really since Rampage started, that they're taking the women's wrestling criticism a little bit more to heart, because we're seeing more than one feud at a time. Now, I was looking at the results from NXT from this week, and they actually had three women's matches on the two-hour NXT show this week.
Oh, Steve, really, I'm sorry. I hate to do this, but I have to correct you on air. It's NXT 2.0 / Ladies Night.
Okay, hold on one second.
Or is it colon Ladies Night? I would get my punctuation mixed up.
Okay, type that in. I gotta write stuff down in order to remember. NXT 2.0 Ladies Night. And but we went pretty much from whoever was the champion and whomever they were feuding with, and that's it. Now they're Dark and Elevation, they have a ton of women's matches on it, but now we have Britt Baker, Ruby Soho, and then whomever the next contender is going to be. This week we have Jade, who is a black woman, Thunder Rosa, Mexican heritage, Nyla Rose, Native American transgender woman in a three-way match. And then you've also had this Tay-Jay, Bunny, Penelope Ford feud going on. So in the short span that Rampage has been on, they've pretty much tripled the and granted, one times three is tripling. But, you know, they have...
And we're getting a Shida Serena, I think, too, this week.
Shida Serena this week. You know, someone from Japan and someone who's good at yoga. And so there is starting to be, it feels like they do listen to their audience. But as you said, Brian, it's going to take time in order to do that. And it's not just, okay, in 2 weeks, we're going to have everything solved. But that women's division, I believe, is a lot more diverse than what we're seeing on the male side. And because you're starting from something that was so small to begin with, you're now able to expand that at least a little bit quicker. Because, I mean, you and I have talked the last few weeks. I mean, Jade's a star. She's just kind of I haven't seen someone that new with that much talent, just innate talent, in a very long time.
No, I think, I agree. I think Jade, I think that they still have to get there to get her to a point where she could be at like a championship level in terms of being able to have those longer matches and things like that. I also don't necessarily love the pairing with Mark Sterling.
But that's being nice.
That is what it is.
that's being nice there, Brian.
That is what it is. But I think that, you know, but for example, you watch that, you know, the Battle Royal they had, and you see the diversity of that roster. I think it's just, it's tough when it comes to things like this to just flat out compare AEW to WWE, because this is certainly a place where the size and the longevity of WWE helps them. You know, WWE, it wasn't overnight that they were like, we're taking women's wrestling seriously. And they have signed so many female.
It wasn't until Stephanie McMahon came down from Mount Sinai with two tablets and birthed the women's revolution.
I don't know if Stephanie McMahon invented women. They did not exist before 2012. But I think AEW will get there. It is it's so interesting. I don't know if either of you have done this. If you go back and you just watch where AEW was on its first show, that first, you know, that 2019 time period to where they are now, it's night and day. And a lot of what has happened, some of it is they have created new stars. A lot of those quote unquote homegrown stars were there from the beginning. MJF, Darby Allin, Jungle Boy, and Sammy, they're there from show one. You know, they had been there. And a lot of the big achievements that they have done is they have successfully convinced a lot of major players that AEW is the place to be, which is crazy to think that they've done that over the course of 2 years. They've already made it very clear that it's the place where every tag team should be. And I think that if I had to put, you know, a name to it, I would not be surprised if when the time comes, Charlotte Flair switches. I think as soon as a major female talent decides to make that switch, I think one of the few advantages that WWE has will be gone. And I think that performers of color will also switch. You know, as great as it is to see, you know, Adam Cole or Malachi Black, you know, have kind of like the reins taken off and show the fullness of their creativity. I want the same thing for Ricochet. I want the same thing for Keith Lee. I want the same thing for Apollo Crews. And hopefully when those guys' contracts come due, they're able to take advantage of that same system. And I think they will. You know, I think that when it comes to performers of, you know, Latin and Hispanic performers, I think they've had pretty good track records in that company. I think Andrade, here's the interesting thing with Andrade is I think Tony Khan, a little kind of booking philosophy I think he has, it doesn't really get talked about enough, is that he's a big fan of delayed gratification. I think he's a big fan of bringing people in, don't strap the rocket to them, get people just used to seeing them around, maybe actually lower expectations mm-hmm. and then spring him on people.
Like Miro. You know,
I think if Miro had come in with the God's favorite champion from day one, I don't think it would have worked. I think people would have felt like, oh, here's a WWE reject, and you're just doing the same character, and whatever. It would have felt very TNA. But you bring him in, you get people just seeing him, and then when he goes back and, you know, they kind of like, they withhold it. And then when they give you the thing that you want to see, oh my God, yes. And I think we're going to get the same thing with Andrade. I think Andrade is ultimately going to get, like, his kind of super posse of, like, you know, AAA stars or whatever. And I think he's really going to get the right. If it's me, honestly, I would even consider having him beating Sandy for that TNT title at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a very natural feud of Andrade wanting to recruit Sammy and Sammy not wanting to go down that path and then Andrade beating him. I wouldn't be surprised if Andrade is being set up for, you know, you mentioned, you know, Adam Page. I think it is very likely that Adam Page will probably return, if I had to bet on it, probably November, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I think he'll be any for the title, you know, either at Double or Nothing or maybe at the first big TNT special. And then he's going to need challengers. And that's when we're going to be looking at Miro and Andrade as potential challengers for him. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that's so different with AEW that I think WWE has just sort of like tainted a lot of people is that like there's long-term plans here. You know, if you can look at a Will Hobbs or a Ricky Starks and say, or a Dante Martin and be like, they seem to be building stuff up for these people. They probably are. This isn't WWE where we need to get them in that position right away because maybe Vince will forget about them. You know, I trust the storytelling on AEW. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I also want to go back to the original point of I think the lack of diversity in the main event scene, the lack of women's wrestling on the show, I think is hurting their growth. And so it is something that they do need to remedy sooner rather than later, but in an effective way. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that if they just suddenly start having, you know, more women's matches on the show, that'll automatically mean more women watch. I think they need more female stars, without a doubt. But that, again, takes time.
One moment from Dynamite, Brian, that I mentioned a little bit earlier, and I'm wondering, because I can't remember if you ever worked with this individual, but I'm wondering what you made of the Leo Rush vignette, and how do you think they'll roll him out in AEW?
I never really worked with Leo. I think he might have been on an MLW show. I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and look. I don't necessarily need him to come in with, you know, the JBL on Robin Hood gimmick. I don't know if I need that. We'll see how it goes. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Tony's very good at, you know, but Leo is a guy that is one of the people that I go, yeah, that is a star of color is available. And they absolutely should sign him up and do big things with him. You know, we'll see. I mean, I know that he does have, you know, some stuff, you know, personally that you know, mental health that you know, I hope that all that's squared away and I hope he's, you know, able to, you know, perform at the best of his abilities. I've only heard, you know, great things from mutual friends of ours about him just as a guy. So I only wish the best for him there. And he's one of those guys that do I think he can main event a pay-per-view? Yeah, do I think he can main event Full Gear? No. Do I think he could, you know, have a really great 2 to 3 week long feud with Kenny Omega? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He should absolutely be like in a spot like Jungle Boy had, you know, a few months ago after Double or Nothing. And those are those spots where I feel like, you know, I would love it if they did that more with, you know, yeah, I don't think Dante Martin's going to main event a pay-per-view, but you can give him, you know, a singles match with Kenny. Those are the kind of places where I think they could really benefit from expanding those opportunities. Because they should at least have, you know, someone at the level of MJF or Darby, and I think Leo can be that.
Yeah. Like, if Leo can just rescue Private Party from the Hardy family office, that would make my day, Brian, man. Because
I think like that'd be great, yeah.
Like, a year ago, like, if you, like, talking about that first Dynamite, like, Private Party was a prominent feature on that show. And maybe it was a little too soon for where they were at in terms of their career, but I think those guys have really cooled off since being paired with Matt. And I love Matt. Like, a lot of what Matt's done has been great. You know, you and I doing Review and Impact, we spent many a night talking about, you know, the final deletion and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But this Hardy Family Office just isn't working for me.
I agree. I had not thought about that pairing. And maybe this whole, like, Leo Rush money thing is, like, maybe that's a way that he's going to lure people away from Hardy Family Office. And I think my hope is sooner rather than later. I'm hoping at Full Gear they introduce trios titles. And yes, I think that Leo and Private Party could be a really incredible trios act. I hadn't even thought about putting that group together. I think that's fantastic. I think Hardy Family Office is really good for what it's meant to be, which is their cannon fodder. They are the job squad. And by attaching Hardy to them, it sort of gives them an identity in a way that's better than just throwing out Butcher and Blade or just throwing out, you know, Jack Evans. Mm-hmm. But I do agree that I think Private Party is more talented than that. And I think with the initial idea where they started with just Hardy as their manager, that was probably good. But now that it's become this other thing, I really would agree it's time to rescue them. And then, listen, they have plenty of dark tag teams that can, you know, they can move up. And I would love to see that.
And of course, for anybody listening, just to make sure I help out my tag team partner, Brian means the show dark.
I mean, dark elevation.
So I almost said dark.
I almost said dark tag teams like Bear Country. I should have said. Like,
always go with your gut, Brian, man. Have you learned nothing from all these years podcasting with me, brother? Really quick, though, Brian, because I know Steve wants to get in here, I want to bring up one more name because I think this is the opposite spectrum from a Leo Rush. When you talk about the way AEW utilizes various talents at various stages of their career, and a man that you and I talked a lot about through our pairing was that man called Sting. And like this kind of late career renaissance that Sting's had in AEW, as much as I'm an unabashed fan of Steve Borden, like this has gone better than even I could have predicted, Brian, like the way they've utilized Sting in this company.
I honestly can't say enough about just blanket all credit to AEW, the way that they so wisely use legends. I mean, we could you know talk all day about Arn Anderson's Stand Your Ground promo from Wednesday night, but the fact that that guy is a performer at that level who can speak that well right now, and knowing he was just sitting backstage for two decades at WWE, and they never like how many dudes could he have gotten over?
Yep,
with that promo as a character on screen. You know, we can go on and on, but Sting, I've got to give so much credit to Sting. A guy who I think clearly loves wrestling, loves being around wrestling. You know, the fact that he's willing to be there every week just to be in Darby's corner and to put Darby over. And this isn't just here. Like, we've seen him do this in other companies. He clearly wants to make the next generation of guys. I think the thing that hurts him sometimes is that he loves the business and is so trusting so much is that sometimes he does pretty bad booking and things that don't actually help the other guy. And he'll just kind of like, whatever you need me to do, boss, from time to time. And I think he's working for a really smart boss now that knows how to use him properly and knows how to treat him like a legend, but then also put him in really interesting situations. I mean, the face-off that he had with Orange Cassidy, you know, comes to mind.
Yep.
That great shot of him with Moxley and Kingston and just seeing them freak out with like, oh my God, we're here with Sting. And knowing how many talents over the years WWE has had that they could have done the similar thing to.
Like Sting?
You know, Sting, like Sting. Sting is one of the guys. But for example, Sting is what? 10 years older than Taker? And they did that one tag match with Taker and Roman. That was it. I also think that and I think time will bear this out. I don't think Taker is as selfless a man as Sting is. You know, without getting too much into what I know from behind the scenes, in 2016, Undertaker had the ability of elevating a younger guy and working with him at Mania, and instead he decided to pull Shane McMahon out of retirement. I think that's very telling about the guy. There was anyone up and down that roster he could have worked with over many, many years. He could have worked with Kevin Owens at that WrestleMania, and instead he did a truly awful Hell in a Cell match with Shane McMahon. And he's a guy who I think really could have helped elevate somebody.
Yeah.
It is crazy to me that he beat Bray Wyatt like 3 times. Yeah, that's just a guy. And maybe I shouldn't put it all on him. Like, maybe some of it is Vince wanted to do that and Vince wanted to keep the gimmick alive and all of that. Like, he also strikes me as the kind of dude he'll do what he's told. And maybe that's just a problem with Vince, like Vince not understanding the true power of these legends. Mm-hmm. You know, Sting probably never should have been main eventing a pay-per-view with Seth Rollins in the first place. The thing that led to, you know, the health issues, he probably should have just never been put in that position. He maybe should have been in teams and doing, you know, like even if Taker didn't want to do the Mania match, which is why it never happened. Taker didn't want to do the match. You still should have done Team Sting versus Team Taker at a Survivor Series.
Yeah.
There was just, you know, I think that's the thing with Vince, that Vince has a very hard time of wrapping his head around groups and teams. He can really only see individual stars with like short-term managers. Unless it's like a Paul Heyman. And I think the idea of having legends around to help build up younger acts, they just don't understand it. If you listen to the, you know, when Paul White was on Jericho's podcast, he talked about like the frustration of the fact that him and Braun were attacking for like 2 weeks and they broke him up. And his feeling was, keep us together for a while. I can really teach this kid a lot of stuff and I can help him get over. And I think had those two been a tag team for like 6 months, yeah, that probably would have happened. And it probably would have benefited Braun Strowman in a lot of ways. Mark Henry is another guy who you could have partnered with somebody else. He could have been someone's manager. Could have. There's a lot like, and that's just, there are so many tools in the big book of pro wrestling to entertain the crowd and get them emotionally invested. And as a result, get them to connect to your characters. And then make money off of those characters that WWE just for a reason just doesn't do. They just tie their hands behind their back so many times in so many ways that you don't need to do. You know, I think Steve Austin would be willing to come back, not for a match, but probably for a pretty significant angle. I think he'd be willing to be a part of, you know, like getting someone. I think a lot of legends would be willing to do things if the creative was there and if there was a clear path. And I think with Sting, he wanted to come in, he wanted to work, he wanted to be there, and he was given a great character to work with in a very clear path of what they wanted to do. There was no, you know, when he came into WWE, it was a one and done with Hunter. And then they called him, they're like, hey, you want to main event a pay-per-view with Seth? Because they were desperate and they didn't have anyone to headline a show. I don't think that's how it worked. I think from the moment that Sting came in, he clearly knew he was going to be paired with Darby Allin or... Oh, it's been a year now.
There's also that part too, and this is just from being a fan and watching and talking to friends over the years, that when you bring in these legends from outside, or these, and the WCW coming into WWE is the main example of it, you have to start over. And it doesn't matter if you're, you know, we just had the Dark Side of the Ring with Canyon that was on in the past week, or someone like Sting. Like, Sting was essentially in that, it was a comedy match for all intents and purposes with Triple H. And then it's just like, not DDP, another example that came to mind, a guy who was immensely over based on his hard work. And then eventually, you know, he's a stalker, you know, like, yeah. and not even a face stalker. Like, he was a heel on top of that. And then you're seeing, like, as we were talking originally about AEW kind of molding to what you need. Oh, we have FTR, who was, you know, to be fair, built more in NXT. They really haven't changed at all since they've come over to AEW. But they were like a Four Horsemen Midnight Express, you know, tribute act. So what do? We put them with Tully Blanchard.
Mm-hmm. You exactly.
Know, yeah, there's, you know, the Art and Cody thing was pretty natural. Sting and Darby, you know, obvious. You know, they look identical. And it's the little things that they've done with those two where Sting got involved this week just after the match. He's like, yeah, I'll give the guy a Scorpion Death
Drop. Yeah.
Has to do very, very little. You don't have to put his health at risk. I mean, one of the greatest parts about the CM Punk return promo at the United Center was when he looked up and there's Sting in the rafters with Darby. Sting didn't do a dang thing. He just stared. And then Darby gave, you know, I will never forget that. Like, you know, you see Darby kind of smile for the first time. And it was just the pairing of the two of them. And it was such an expertly framed shot. And just to flash back to CM Punk and then challenging Darby, it's just those little things. It's like these natural pairings instead of like, nope, you're on my turf now. You have to conform to what I say because I'm in charge. It's well, working and, with yeah. instead of working for.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a big thing that, I mean, we've said it for years and years, and it's a weird thing that like one of the great things on just a small level is that AEW has like vindicated so many things that wrestling fans have been saying for so long. WWE is a show made for one person. It is made for one 76-year-old, wildly out of touch person who has taken multiple chair shots to the head, and we won't go any further down that line than just saying that. Who the show has to be catered to his whims the moment the show goes on the air. That's not how AEW runs, and this is going to sound kind of wild until, like, you know, I think if you stop and think, but like, I think it's probably fair to say that Tony Khan is easily the most challenging adversary that I think Vince has ever had to deal with. He's more accomplished than I think Vince is. Mm-hmm. If you look at everything he's achieved outside of pro wrestling, he's more in touch with the audience. And quite honestly, he's better funded if we're just talking about the capital that's at his, you know, disposal based on his, you know, based on his family. I think that Tony Khan, they're also like most smart people don't get into wrestling. And Tony Khan is a smart, accomplished person who is choosing to get into wrestling. I don't think anyone of his caliber has ever gotten into this thing. I think there's been a lot of people who, if they had done it, probably would have been great at it. I think there's a lot of, you know, famous fans who were accomplished in other forms of entertainment that had they given it a shot, I think probably would have gotten it and been pretty good at it. But in terms of the people who've actually gotten into the wrestling business, it's usually a guy like a Vince Russo who gets way too much control too fast, or a Dixie Carter who just has money.
Listen, bro. Everybody knows the kids want to see Judy Bagwell, bro.
Listen, it was entertaining. But I think – or Eric Bischoff mm-hmm. definitely was in the right place at the right time, but the problem was at the end of the day, he wasn't the one signing the checks.
Right.
And so he had a boss that could replace him. That's not the case with Tony, you know, and, you know, Vince, you know, I think the time has come and passed when Vince should have been replaced. And if WWE were like a real company with an actual board of directors, they would have replaced him. Like, you couldn't have seen the popularity decrease that they've seen over the last two decades and not change your leadership. Any other company would have changed the leadership. But again, that just goes, you know, back to your original point in terms of, there's just so many things that are just obvious and make sense. And almost any wrestling fan would tell you this is how you should do it. And because Tony's a student of this stuff, He listens to all the podcasts. He watches every form of wrestling. And that's another thing that I don't think people give enough credit or really think about, is that Tony has an appreciation and an interest and a respect, I think, for pretty much every style of wrestling. And he likes them all. I don't think with a lot of wrestling promoters, especially if they're former wrestlers or if they came up in a certain territory, they have a bit of a bias towards that kind of wrestling. Mm-hmm. And so for them, that's always what wrestling should be. We're seeing it now with NXT 2.0. Vince clearly thinks wrestling should be this thing. And if it's not this thing, you know, I think he thinks the dip in popularity has been Hunter keeps giving me all these small indie guys. Not, I don't know how to book a promotion or get people over anymore. It's just the guys are small. Get me the real guys and we'll be popular. I don't think Tony thinks that way. I think he appreciates great matches and athleticism, but he's not going to say, oh, well, it just has to be the big guys, or it just has to be the high flyers, or it just has to be, you know, like, I don't know. I know I'm rambling, but I think that's the thing that helps AEW so much and what makes the show so exciting is you watch it and it is a variety show. And to wrap this all up, the legends are a part of that and they understand that and they don't overdo it. We're never going to see Sting versus Kenny Omega. And that's fine. We shouldn't see that. You know, you know, TNA probably put
We didn't invite you here this week to kill my dreams, Brian. Man.
I will say this though. I honestly, I was talking with a friend about this back when the Bucks still had the titles. I think they should have done Sting and Darby versus the Bucks. I think that would have been an interesting draw on pay-per-view. And I think I still would love to see what the Bucks could get out of Sting.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. I think one last point on Tony Khan before we kind of start to wrap this week, brother, is I think with Tony Khan, you got a dude in his late 30s that is producing television that is appealing to people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s versus right. a dude in Vince McMahon that's in his 70s who's producing television that apparently mainly appeals to dudes in their 50s and older.
Yes.
It's about the same age difference.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the big thing with WWE that for starters, I'll say this. WWE has no casual fans. If you're watching Raw for 3 hours, you're not a casual fan. The casual fans don't exist. The casual fans are the 3 million people that stopped watching over the last 5 years. Those are the casual fans. I think the people that watch now are set in their ways. They're going to watch. Like, it is their routine. It doesn't matter what the show is. What they put out there, they will literally watch anything. I mean, we would joke sometimes back with TNA when they're on Spike. They just had that million viewers. Didn't matter who they pushed. Didn't matter what they did. They just had those million viewers. And I think WWE is kind of the same way. I think their floor is probably like 1.4, as we saw with like the performance, the Performance Center era. But I think they really kind of are at their bottom. And I think it's an example I've used. I think when we've talked about it, it's the same as the Knicks or any other kind of like legacy sports franchise that hasn't been good for a while, but still has their loyal fans and smart fans. Spike Lee is a very smart guy. He's in the front row of all the Knicks games. I don't think he's an idiot, but it's easier to watch a bad team and complain about them than give up on it entirely and cut out that part of your life.
Right.
For a lot of people, WWE is a big part of their life. It is a part of their personality. They have social groups and social circles that are tied into that. Now, I think what you're seeing with the internet, I don't think there is, I don't think it's an insignificant amount of people that are probably keeping up with the WWE product through podcasts and Twitter while not actively watching it or spending money on it. So there's still a part of the wrestling community discussing it, but they're no longer a customer, and that is such a bad place for WWE to be in when it comes to just as a business.
Final question, Brian Mann. And I love that you brought up the idea of customers, because there's a man in AEW that's been selling people a lot of things for a while now. And a good portion of the audience, particularly your brethren and sistren in New York, are not buying that anymore. And that is the purveyor of freedom and justice and the father of liberty. That's one Cody Rhodes. Any thoughts on Cody and where Cody's story might end up here in the near future.
Well, as what I, as I always have to mention, anytime we mention Cody Rhodes, Cody, yes. Cody and I did go to the same elementary school. that is the reason why I got into wrestling, was when I met when his dad was picking him up from after school one day. But I think
look at here, Cody, get away from that Brian man, boy, daddy. He's bad news, baby. He's hard times, daddy.
What
was he driving?
I don't remember that.
Great question.
Just make it up. Like it was.
I'm imagining like a station wagon, maybe.
Delta 88, Oldsmobile.
A Crown Vic.
These were hard times. He hitchhiked. So I think, although if I remember correctly, I think Dustin picked him up more than Dusty did. But all that being said, I think that with Cody, I think they're smart. I think Cody is being turned heel now. Will he ever acknowledge it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think they might be purposefully doing a Cena thing, but again, on purpose, where he still is portraying himself as the top guy. And is this like, you know, I'm just a baby face, but a lot of the people are going to hate him. I don't know if he's ever going to fully turn heel and cut that. Oh, you fans. I don't know if he's ever going to go there. I think we are seeing like the fact that from day one, he has emerged from the center in between the heel and babyface, you know, tunnels. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think they've thought this through. And the big thing that we saw at Arthur Ashe, and we saw again this week, is he comes out through the middle. Arn comes out through the babyface tunnel. Brandy comes out through the heel tunnel. Mm-hmm. And I do think that is meant to tell us something. I think it's meant to show that he is this guy with these two sides, and which one is he going to go with? Yes, there is the part of him that is the son of Dusty Rhodes, that is connected to this great legacy, that you know, has, you know, his brother, that has these younger guys that are counting on him. We love that. But there's also the business side of things. And there's also this part that maybe feels like, you know, he's getting things handed to him. And also the you know, the ending racism promo that people, you know.
God. You know, like. Repping the flag.
That's this other side of him. And I think we're probably going to see a storyline where those two sides are warring, you know, within him. I personally would love if this kind of leads to like him and like Johnson having a feud together. Now I do think Cody should turn. I would love it if Cody fully turned and joined the Elite. And I want to see the Elite get up to NWO levels and Hangman Page be that Sting, who is the last guy to come in. And they even tried to, it's like, guy, they're like, the band is pretty much fully back together. Come back in with us. And then Hangman is the guy who brings them down. Because I do think that's what they're doing. It could just be me projecting. I think they want to show that they can actually pull off the Sting Hogan match. That WCW like fucked up all those years ago. I that's where I kind of feel like they're going. So I would love to see Cody rejoin the Elite. Even if that doesn't happen, I think Cody as a heel outside of the Elite is still very needed. They don't really have a heel at that level that's not in the Elite. I would love to see him and Mox work a program. We haven't seen that yet, and I think that would be a really interesting storyline. There's tons of stuff that can be done there. That I would love to see. And listen, we know Cody can play a great heel. You know, he did it on the indies. It just depends on whether or not he wants to actually fully go there. He might tease it, but that's you know, I think we're getting the yin and the yang right now is the story that we're getting with him.
Go ahead, Steve Willie.
Yeah, there was a lot of that during the Daily's Place era when he was TNT champ. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of subtle heelness depending on who he was wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
There's always that little bit there. And my hope is that he just doesn't go back to. I was really uncomfortable with some of his heel work when he was doing some of the Japan stuff where like he was forcing himself on Kota Ibushi. I found that really distasteful.
Yeah.
So he can you know, I don't mind this kind of shade of gray, and you're right, like from day one coming out from the middle, you know, he can constantly go either way. And right now the fans are dictating which way they want him to go.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't think he'll ever fully go heel. I don't think he ever wants to do that, even though I think that could be interesting. But I think right now he wants to see just how far can I tip over into that and then bring him back. I think that's what he wants to do. Because, you know, I think with Arn, like, that promo wasn't a promo when it was done that you were like, oh, man, Arn's 100% right. You know, it's like Arn was kind of sounded like a crazy man and was maybe a little too hard on this dude. And I think that's where we're supposed to be. I mean, that's the thing that's so interesting with AEW is that and it's so funny because, like, you watch WWE and, like, they'll do shit that just doesn't make sense. And you'll get WWE fans who are like, let the story play out. Or, like, they'll read into stuff that was totally not intentional. Mm-hmm. But with AEW, a lot of times those shades of gray really do matter. The way that someone looks at someone can matter. The way that people's internal, you know, the way that people feel internally really does matter. Mm. People have internal conflict and you don't know which way they're going to go. You know, when, you know, the Bucks, before they joined Kenny, there was, I mean, hell, I mean, look at this Kenny, you know, Hangman story that they're telling. That's going to ultimately be like this, you know, 2.5 year storyline they've had between these guys. Everything that involved with them being a tag team, the tag team match they had with the Bucks. These subtleties really do mean something in this company, and I think that's what we're probably getting with Cody. I think he wants to see just how far he can go into heel and then pull it back. I think he likes that challenge as a performer.
Well, Steve Willie, like, that was a great answer, and it might have fooled you because this is the first time you've talked to Brother Man, but Brian's not fooling me, not for a second. Brian Man isn't slick, because that was a great answer, ladies and gentlemen. But I saw through it. I see Brian is planting the seeds for his AEW debut. We're going to be watching Dynamite 1 week, Steve Willie. And Cody's just about to go too far over the line. And then all of a sudden, you're going to hear good old JR. By God, do you know who that is, Tony? That's Brian Mann. He went to elementary school with Cody. He can bring him back, by God.
I'm glad JR remembers me.
Yes. But yeah, this has been a great talk, Brian. This is a fabulous debut effort here on the main event, and we'll definitely have to bring you back when Scott is with us. But before we let you go, is there anything that you would like to promote, my friend? I know you've been kind of like your work rate, like you've become Sting in your podcast work rate last few years, brother, where, you know, you just come out for these spots every now and then and get a pop from the crowd, and then, you know, you don't do a whole lot, but you do enough to connect with the audience. So, Brian, man, what have you got going on? Where can people connect with you if they want to find out more about your I was going to say unique, but that's too lazy a word. I would say your nuanced view of the world of professional wrestling, which we don't get a lot of nuance when we discuss this sport.
I would probably, first off, I'd probably say I'm more like a Dustin. You know, I come out, I get my pops, but I'm doing a lot of work behind the scenes. and listen, if you don't particularly like me, then I'm a QT Marshall. I come out, I annoy you, but I'm doing a lot of work.
Yes, you still somehow found a way to finagle your way into a pay-per-view payday.
Well, first of all, Nate, thank you. I always, you know, love chatting with you. It's a shame we can't do it, you know, on a more regular basis like we used to. And Steve, it's great talking with you for the first
it's a pleasure.
First time. I really enjoyed our chat, or as much as I dominated it. But thank you for having me on and putting up with my rants. If people want more of me, they can follow me on Twitter at Brian Max Mann. I've actually, over the last couple months, I've made my Twitter account private just so that, you know, people don't want to just see me complain about wrestling. It isn't the first thing that potential employers see. Because I just treat Twitter is a pillow that I yell my wrestling opinions into and nothing else. But if you want to follow me on there at Brian Max Mann, I also have another a new project coming out from Complex in a couple of weeks. The week that this comes out, called Making It. It's a docuseries where we interview up and coming musical artists. And that'll be rolling out over the next month and a half. So keep an eye out for that. And then finally, a show that I got to do that was very fun is a show called Bars that I did with First We Feast. They do Hot Ones. This was a show I got to do with one of my friends, Wilmer, where each episode he created a brand new signature cocktail inspired by a different rap song. So you can go check those out on First We Feast. It's called Bars. We did a Malibu yacht. we did a WAP drink. It's all over the place. Go check it out.
Good stuff, brother. Always good catching up with you, my friend. We'll have to do it again soon. Steve Willie, any final thoughts before we depart, my friend?
No, Brian, it was really a pleasure. And you can rant all you want. I mean, I literally listen for a living, so it's great to be able to hear you again on these wrestling podcast airways and really any podcast airways. And you can follow me, Steve Willie, number one, on Instagram. Now officially followed by Lou Malnati's Pizza.
That is wow. Big news.
Yes. So now I'm just going to try to parlay that into actually getting free pizza. And my life is made. I'm retiring. If you want to hear me talk about wrestling, you could rewind about 90 minutes and listen to this show again.
That is phenomenal. Like, you buried the lead, Steve. As anybody that follows Steve on Instagram knows, he is a Lou Malnati's aficionado. So to be acknowledged it's like if Michael Jordan just said, "Hey, Steve, thanks for being a fan."
That has been one of the blessings of AEW being in Chicago so much, is that while I'm quite a few hours away, the most bizarre thing to little Steve Willie is that they have been running minutes from where I grew up. Like, it's not, we talked about this, you know, a few months ago, like where All Out is in Hoffman Estates, right across the highway was where I graduated high school. And I wish this stuff was around when I was of that age, because maybe then I wouldn't have been such a nerd. Maybe people would have liked wrestling with me.
Mm. We can't change the past, Steve. We can only live in the moment.
Right, exactly.
Speaking of the moment is now for all of our wonderful podcast here at Place Be Nation Wrestling. But don't forget to check out all of our brother and sister feeds, PTB and Pop, the Jenny position helmed by the wonderful Jennifer Smith. We've got the No-So Connection, North-South Connection. Check that out. And, of course, the Kings of Sport Patreon, patreon.com/Kings of Sport. $5 gets you in the door. Steve's been on the Patreon. Scotty's been on the Patreon. I think Brian Mann might have even. Yeah, Brian's made an appearance on the Patreon. So all of your favorites are on the Patreon for $5. So kick down that forbidden door and check it out. That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Want to thank Brian Mann again. Scott Griscola will be back next time. So for Brian and Steve and Scotty somewhere out there in the ether, I'm Godfather Nate Milton, and we will see you all next time on the main event. Hey, Steve Willie.
Oh, hey, Nate Milton.
Did you know, like, a lot of people have been talking about Arn Anderson the last couple of days, and I found some interesting trivia about Arn Anderson. About 2 or 3 years ago, he opened up a boutique store that specializes in two of his favorite passions. Like, a lot of people don't know, Arn loves tattoos. He's a tattoo enthusiast. So Arn opened up a shop that combines tattoos with his other passion. You can, you know, go online, Steve, and look up, you can place an order. I'll give you the name right now.
It's the URL.
Okay. It's Arn Anderson's Tats and Gats.
This is the beat jaw of the year. Woo.
Yo, man, it's a lot of brothers out there flaking and perpetrating, scared to kick reality. Yo, man, it's a lot of brothers out there flaking and perpetrating, scared to kick reality.
Get the Gats on. Get the gag, get the gag, till the tip wall pops it, till the tip wall pops it, get the gag, get the gag, get the gag.
until at 13, cross it till at 13, cross it, get the gas, get the gas, get the gas. Until at 17, cross it till at 17, cross it, get the gas, get the gas, get the gas. Until at big man, cross it till at big man, cross it, get the gas, get the gas, get the gas, get the gas. Until at ghost time, cross it till at ghost time, cross it, get the gas, get the gas, get the gas. Until at Mac, know your posse, till at Mac, know your posse, get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. Until at Cali, yo, posse, till at Cali, yo, posse, get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. Until at Mel for me, posse, till at Mel for me, posse, get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. Until at St. T, posse, till at St. T, posse, get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. Until at Mill Street, posse, till at Mill Street, posse, get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. Until at Parkway, posse, till at Parkway, posse, get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. Till it 3-9, pops it till it 3-9, pops it 6-6, that ass, ho. 6-6, that ass, ho. 6-6, that ass, ho. 6-6, that ass, ho. 6-6-6-6-6-6, that ass. 6-6-6-6-6-6, that ass. 6-6-6-6-6, that ass. 6-6-6-6-6, that ass. Dick sucking hoes, nut sucking hoes, 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 they ain't nothing but hoes. Dick sucking hoes, nut sucking hoes, hoes. They're nuts but hoes. Dick sucking hoes, nuts sucking hoes. Hoes, hoes, they're nuts but hoes. Dick sucking hoes, nuts sucking hoes. Hoes, hoes, they're nuts but hoes. You ain't nuts for the dope man bitch. 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 Ain't got no job, now you want the trick. You ain't nuts for the dope man bitch. Ain't got no job, now you want the trick. You ain't nothing for the dope man bitch. Ain't got no job, now you want the trick. You ain't nothing for the dope man bitch. Ain't got no job, now you want the trick. Cause I'm a nigga with a rock hard bone. And I'm taking one of these hoes home. Cause I'm a nigga with a rock hard bone. And I'm taking one of these hoes home. Cause I'm a nigga with a rock hard bone. And I'm taking one of these hoes home. Cause I'm a nigga with a rock hard bone. And I'm taking one of these hoes home. Cause I'm a nigga with a rock hard bone. And I'm taking one of these hoes home. Cause I'm a nigga with a rock hard bone. And I'm taking one of these hoes home. Say, boot up, bitch, bitch.
Rock the soul good until she wanted it again.
Say, boot up, bitch, bitch.
Rock the soul good until she wanted it again.
Say, boot up, bitch, bitch.
Rock the soul good until she wanted it again.
Say, boot up, bitch, bitch.
Rock the soul good until she wanted it again.
Say, boot up, bitch, bitch. Boot up, bitch, 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 boot up, boot, bitch. Boot up, bitch, boot up, boot, bitch. Boot up, bitch, boot up, boot, bitch. Boot up, boot up, boot up, boot up, nigga. Boot up, boot up, boot up, boot up. Say, boot up, boot up, boot up, boot up, nigga. Boot up, boot up, boot up, boot up. Say, ride that dick a little stronger. And you might make the dick a little longer. Say, ride that dick a little stronger. And you might make the dick a little longer. Say, ride that dick a little stronger. And you might make the dick a little longer. Say, ride that dick a little stronger. And you might make the dick a little longer. Say, ride that dick a little stronger. And you might make the dick a little longer. Say, ride that dick a little stronger. And you might make the dick a little longer. Say, boot up, bitch, bitch. Come on, come on, come on. Boot up, bitch, bitch. Come on, come on, come on. Boot up, bitch, bitch.
Call myself a Uzi and my brother a Nine.
Boot up, bitch, bitch.
Fuck that nigga, fuck that bitch.
Boot up, bitch, bitch, bitch.
Call myself a Uzi and my brother a Nine.
Boot up, bitch, bitch.
Fuck that nigga, fuck that bitch.
I want to ride that dick in a hole. And a nigga will buy you full gold. I want to ride that dick in a hole, and a nigga will buy you full gold. I want to ride that dick in a hole, and a nigga will buy you full gold. I want to ride that dick in a hole, and a nigga will buy you full gold. I want to ride that dick hole, ride it, ride it, 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 ride it, ride it, ride that dick hole, ride it,
ride it, ride, ride that dick, ho. Ride it, ride it, ride, ride that dick, ho. Ride it, ride it, ride it, ride it, ride it, ride it, ride, ride that dick, ho. Ride it, ride it, ride, ride that dick, ho. Ride it, ride it, ride, ride that dick, ho. Ride it, ride it, ride it, ride it. Ain't no nigga like a money making nigga, cause a trick that a nigga ain't sick. I say ain't no nigga like a money making nigga, cause a trick that a nigga ain't sick. I say ain't no nigga like a money making nigga, cause a trick that a nigga ain't sick. I say ain't no nigga like a money making nigga, cause a trick that a nigga ain't sick. I say ain't no nigga like a real real nigga, cause a fake ass nigga ain't sick. I say ain't no nigga like a real real nigga, cause a fake ass nigga ain't sick. I say ain't no nigga like a real real nigga, cause a fake ass nigga ain't sick. I say ain't no nigga like a real real nigga, cause a fake ass nigga ain't sick. Bitch, stop jogging that nigga and suck a nigga dick, then make it bigger. I say bitch, stop jogging that nigga and suck a nigga dick, then make it bigger. I say bitch, stop jogging that nigga and suck a nigga dick, then make it bigger. I say bitch, stop jogging that nigga and suck a nigga dick, then make it bigger. I say bitch, stop talking that shit. A bitch, stop talking that shit. A bitch, stop talking that shit. A bitch, stop talking that shit. Get the gag, get the gag, get the gag, fellas. Get the gag, get the gag, get the gag, fellas. Get the gag, get the gag, get the gag, fellas. I get the gag, get the gag, get the gag, fellas. Cause they boot it up, niggas get jealous, fellas. Get the gag, get the gag, get the gag, fellas. Cause they boot it up, niggas get jealous, fellas. Get the gag, get the gag, get the gag, fellas. Cause they boot it up, niggas get jealous, fellas. Get the gag, get the gag, get the gag, fellas. Cause they boot it up, niggas get jealous, fellas. Get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. So get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. So get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. So get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. So get the gag, yo. So get the gag. So get the gag, yo. So get the gag. So get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. So get the gag, get the gag, get the gag. So get the gag, get the gag, get the gag.